ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. So the materialists, they gradually get some idea of the natural laws that are in effect. Of course, they don't know the lawmaker, Krishna. But they give names to these laws. So one of these laws that they've discovered is they call Murphy's Law. Who's aware of that? Murphy's Law says that anything that can possibly go wrong will go wrong, and at the worst possible moment. So that's why you see all the wires today. Normally we are wireless, but somehow or other the wireless system is acting up, so I had to scramble. But I have a law that I've discovered in devotional service, and that law is that Krishna never leaves his devotees high and dry. There's always some protection around you if you just know where to look. So this was the protection. I had to run and go a different computer and plug in and attach. And so that's why you see what's on the board today. Otherwise, we would have been sitting here with a blank screen. So Krishna always covers our back. So we're continuing our reading from the 8th canto. This is chapter 15, Bali Maharaj Conquers the Heavenly Planets. So there's a lot to read here, chapter summary, and then I think we have to go like into 20-something before there's a purport. So please pay attention. Let's see. I think we'll just take this off now. All right. This chapter describes how Bali, after performing the Vishvajit Yajna, received the benediction of a chariot and various kinds of paraphernalia for war, with which he attacked the king of heaven. All the demigods, being afraid of him, left the heavenly planets and went away, following the instructions of their guru. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to understand how Lord Vamanadeva, on the plea of taking 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj, took everything away from him and arrested him. Shukadeva Goswami responded to this inquiry with the following explanation. In the fight between the demons and the demigods, as described in the 11th chapter of this canto, Bali was defeated and he died in the fight. But by the grace of Shukracharya, he regained his life. So modern scientists would love to discover this science, how to bring people back from dead. They're hoping against hope. Right now, I'm not kidding, you know, there are very cold freezers, many of them in this country, where they've frozen bodies. Walt Disney's one of them. They froze the body hoping that they can find a cure to bring them back to life. That's not the science. This is the science. Shukracharya knows the science. Thus, he engaged himself in the service of Shukracharya, his spiritual master. The descendants of Bhrigu, being pleased with him, engaged him in the Vishvajit Yajna. When this yajna was performed, from the fire of yajna came a chariot, horses, a flag, a bow, armor, and 2 quivers of arrows. So right here we've lost all the materials. They say these guys are just nuts. You know, you light a fire and out of the fire horses and chariots and things come. But even if they call this mythology, they have their own mythology that something exploded and out of that explosion came all these planets and, you know, this wonderful order that we see around us. Who believes that mythology? Only foolish people. We all have experience when something explodes, things fly apart, and then they fall down and they settle, and that's it. That's what happens when there's an explosion. Just like the World Trade Center. Exploded, things flew literally far away, and then they fell down, and that was it. A lot of dust, and then the dust settled, and that's it. That's what happens when there's an explosion. You don't get planets and satellites circling them and life forms, and this doesn't happen when there's an explosion. So that's their mythology. Maharaj Prahlad, Bali Maharaj's grandfather, gave Bali an eternal garland of flowers, and Shukracharya gave him a concho. Bali Maharaj, after offering obeisances to Prahlad, the Brahmanas, and his spiritual master Shukracharya, equipped himself to fight with Indra and went to Indrapuri with his soldiers. Blowing his concho, he attacked the outskirts of Indra's kingdom. When Indra saw Bali Maharaj's prowess, he went to his own spiritual master, Brihaspati, told him about Bali's strength, and inquired about his duty. Brihaspati informed the demigods that because Bali had been endowed with extraordinary power by the Brahmanas, the demigods could not fight with him. Their only hope was to gain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, there was no alternative. Under the circumstances, Brihaspati advised the demigods to leave the heavenly planets and keep themselves somewhere invisible. The demigods followed his orders, and Bali Maharaj, along with his associates, gained the entire kingdom of Indra. The descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being very affectionate to their disciple Bali Maharaj, engaged him in performing 100 Ashwamedha yagyas. What's the Ashwamedha yagya? Horse sacrifice, yeah. And in Kali Yuga, when do we perform this? Never. I said, when do we perform this? Never. It's one of the things that's forbidden. Ashwamedha gavalambam sannyasa palapaichakam. Deva raina sutopatim kalau pancha vivarjaya. These five things, panch, are vivarjaya. They're not to be done in Kali Yuga. So Ashwamedha, horse sacrifice, gavalambam, the cow sacrifice, sannyas. Not supposed to take sannyas. So he said, and why are we awarding sannyas in ISKCON? Only the Vaishnavas, under the order, strict order of the guru coming from Lord Chaitanya, are allowed to take sannyas in this age. Formerly, the brahmanas, chachas, even up to the vaishyas, they were given second initiation, and any brahmana could take sannyas. But in this age, only the Vaishnava brahmanas are supposed to take, and only under the order of guru. So in this way, Bali enjoyed the opulences of the heavenly planets. All right. There's a lot of verses, so I'm going to skip the Sanskrit. Normally, I love to read the Sanskrit because there's extra potency when you do that, but there's so much today, we're just going to go to the English translations. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything. Why did he beg 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj like a poor man? And when he got the gift for which he had begged, why did he nonetheless arrest Bali Maharaj? I'm very anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions." So this is very instructive for us. We should approach the Bhagavatam in this mood that it's a mystery unfolding. There's a lot of things that are not easy to understand. Just like I mentioned, how is it that you can light a fire, perform some sacrifice, and out of that fire comes horses and chariots and arrows? And you know, how does this happen? Anybody here want to explain? No, we can't explain. So we should listen attentively to the Bhagavatam. And if we go through the 9 cantos consecutively with full attention and interest, like Shukadeva Goswami is displaying, then there's a good chance that all these mysteries will be revealed to us. Text 3. Shukadeva Goswami said, "O King, when Bali Maharaj lost all his opulence and died in the fight, Shukracharya, a descendant of Bhrigu Muni, brought him back to life. Because of this, the great soul Bali Maharaj became a disciple of Shukracharya and began to serve him with great faith, offering everything he had." So there's a deep history behind all of this. Some of it is given in the Mahabharata, like how Shukracharya had this potency to bring people back to life and how the demigods wanted to understand that. So they sent one son of Brihaspati, Kacha, to find out. And it was a long story, but make a long story short, Shukracharya's daughter fell in love with this Kacha. But the demons were very, very suspicious of him. So they would kill him, and the daughter would appeal to Shukracharya, bring him back to life. He would bring him back to life. And so finally, one time, they kill him, they ground him up into fine powder, put him into some liquor, and gave him to Shukracharya that way, and he drank it. So now the remains was in his abdomen. And so the daughter said, bring him back to life. He said, well, if I bring him back to life, I'll die. So Kacha said, well, you teach me the mantras, and then when you die and I come out, I will bring you back to life. So in this way, he learned the secret, and he went back and gave it to the demigods. So the Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni were very pleased with Bali Maharaj, who desired to conquer the kingdom of Indra. Therefore, after purifying him and properly bathing him according to regulative principles, they engaged him in performing the yajna known as Vishvajit. When ghee, clarified butter, was offered in the fire of sacrifice, there appeared from the fire a celestial chariot covered with gold and silk. There also appeared yellow horses like those of Indra and a flag marked with a lion. A gilded bow Gilead means? Yes, gold. It's covered with gold foil. In other words, it's not gold, but it's covered with gold foil. When you take any metal, something, and you cover it with gold foil, that's called gilding. And that used to be a great tradition in Europe in the Middle Ages especially. So there were apprentices always learning this trade, how to gild things. So a gilded bow, two quivers of infallible arrows, and celestial armor also appeared. Bali Maharaj's grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, offered Bali a garland of flowers that would never fade, and Shukracharya gave him a conch shell. When Maharaj Bali had thus performed the special ritualistic ceremony advised by the Brahmanas and had received, by their grace, the equipment for fighting, he circumambulated the Brahmanas and offered them obeisances. He also saluted Prahlad Maharaj and offered obeisances to him. So this may seem a little strange. Prahlad Maharaj is a great devotee of the Lord. Bali is in the demon's camp. Generally, the devotees are in favor of the demigods. Why would he give his grandson, you know, blessings to go and fight against the demigods? All of this seems very strange. But like I said, there are a lot of mysteries in the scriptures, and that's why we need to hear from Guru. Just like the battlefield of Kurukshetra. On the one side, you have Bhishma Dev, who is a great, great devotee of the Lord. On the other side, you have his grandsons, great-grandsons, the Pandavas, who are also devotees of the Lord, and they fight against each other. Who can explain that? So these things go on. That's why we have to hear again from authorities. Otherwise, we just speculate and don't come to any proper conclusion. Then, after getting on the chariot given by Shukracharya, Bali Maharaj, decorated with a nice garland, put protective armor on his body, equipped himself with a bow, and took up a sword and a quiver of arrows. When he sat down on the seat of the chariot, his arms decorated with golden bangles and his ears with sapphire earrings, he shone like a worshipable fire. When he assembled with his own soldiers and the demon chiefs, who were equal to him in strength, opulence, and beauty, they appeared as if they would swallow the sky and burn all directions with their vision. After thus gathering the demoniac soldiers, Bali Maharaj departed for the opulent capital of Indra. Indeed, he seemed to make the entire surface of the world tremble. King Indra's city was full of pleasing orchards and gardens, such as the Nandana Garden. Because of the weight of the flowers, leaves, and fruit, the branches of the eternally existing trees were bending down. The gardens were visited by pairs of chirping birds and singing bees. The entire atmosphere was celestial. Beautiful women protected by the demigods sported in the gardens, which had lotus ponds full of swans, cranes, chakravakas, and ducks. The city was surrounded by trenches full of Ganges water, known as Akash Ganga, and by a high wall which was the color of fire. Upon this wall were parapets for fighting. So this Akash Ganga, we know the story when Vamadeva pierced the universal coverings, the water of the causal ocean comes in and falls on the head of Lord Shiva, and then it travels throughout all the heavenly planets before it comes here on Earth. So this Ganges water that we see here on Earth is actually coming from the celestial region. It's not just like some ordinary river. Again, the ordinary scientists will say, yeah, the snow of the Himalayas and the ice melts and then it forms this river that becomes the Ganges. But we know it's actually coming from the celestial realm. The doors were made of solid gold plates and the gates were of excellent marble. These were linked by various public roads. The entire city had been constructed by Vishvakarma. The city was full of courtyards, wide roads, assembly houses, and not less than 100 million airplanes. The crossroads were made of pearl, and there were sitting places made of diamond and coral. So again, ordinary materialistic readers think this is all mythology, that some sages, they say, even the materialistic persons, researchers, say the Vedas are at least 1,500 years old. We know they're existing eternally, and they were written down more than 5,000 years ago. But they say they're at least 1,500 years old. So you think that sages are going to sit around and just dream up all these descriptions, you know, for what purpose? You're going to dream up this description. Everlastingly beautiful and youthful women who were dressed with clean garments glittered in the city like fires or flames. They all possessed the quality of Shama. And we know that a lot of the places that are mentioned in the scriptures are still existing. A lot of these cities and places on the earth planet that are mentioned in the Bhagavatam, they're still existing. So there's a purport here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a hint of the quality of the Shama woman. Shita kale bhavet ushna, ushna kale shushitalaha. Stano sukatino yasam ta shama parikirtitaha. A woman whose body is very warm during the winter and cool during the summer and who generally has firm breasts is called Shama. So I'm not going to speak on this purport. It's pretty self-evident, pretty clear. We'll go on to the next verse, 18. I think we'll recite this one. This one doesn't have a purport either. We'll go on to, there's one long purport coming up, and then we'll recite that one. So, yeah, let's just keep going. The breezes blowing in the streets of the city bore the fragrance of the flowers falling from the hair of the women of the demigods. Apsaras passed on the streets, which were covered with the white, fragrant smoke of aguru, incense emanating from the windows with golden filigree. Filigree, what's that? Filigree is, yes, like when they, it's like a lattice work. In other words, it's not solid. When something is filigreed, it's not solid. So sometimes you cover your window with a solid screen, right, to keep the light out or whatever. But filigree, it's not solid. It's open so that air and light can come in. So the city was shaded by canopies, decorated with pearls. Let's see, is this the one with the purport? Nope. Yeah, we have to go on, I think, to 28. So let's just keep reading. The city was shaded by canopies decorated with pearls, and the domes of the palaces had flags of pearl and gold. The city always resounded with the vibrations of peacocks, pigeons, and bees. And above the city flew airplanes full of beautiful women who constantly chanted auspicious songs that were very pleasing to the ear. 21. The city was filled with the sounds of mridangas, conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and well-tuned stringed instruments all playing in concert. There was constant dancing and the Gandharvas sang. The combined beauty of Indrapuri defeated beauty personified. 22. No one who was sinful, envious, violent toward other living entities, cunning, falsely proud, lusty, or greedy could enter that city. The people who lived there were all devoid of these faults. Again, hard to understand because we have stories of the demigods acting in lusty ways and envious ways. But it states here that, you know, if you're lusty or greedy, you can't enter the city of Indra. So Indra himself, we know it. Anyway, not so easy to understand. 23. Bali Maharaj, who was the commander of numberless soldiers, gathered his soldiers outside this abode of Indra and attacked it from all directions. He sounded the concho given him by his spiritual master, Shukracharya, thus creating a fearful situation for the women protected by Indra. Seeing Bali Maharaj's indefatigable endeavor and understanding his motive, King Indra, along with the other demigods, approached his spiritual master, Brihaspati, and spoke as follows. 25. My lord, our old enemy, Bali Maharaj, now has new enthusiasm, and he has obtained such astonishing power that we think that perhaps we cannot resist his prowess. No one anywhere can counteract this military arrangement of Bali's. It now appears that Bali is trying to drink up the entire universe with his mouth, lick up the 10 directions with his tongue, and raise fire in every direction with his eyes. Indeed, he has arisen like the annihilating fire known as Sangvartaka. 27. Kindly inform me, what is the cause for Bali Maharaj's strength, endeavor, influence, and victory? How has he become so enthusiastic? So, I'm pretty sure this is the one in the purport. Let's just... Yes, okay, so we'll recite this one. Shri Guru Vacha Janami Magaban Chatrur Unnatir asya karanam Shishyayo pabritang tejo Prigubhir brahmavadibhi Sri Guru Vacha Janami Bhagavan Chatrur Unnatir Asya Karanam Shishyayo Paprtam Tejo Prigupir Pamavadibihi Sri Guru Vacha Janami Bhagavan Chatrur Unnatir Asya Karanam Shishyayo Pabritang Tejo Prigupir Brahmavadibihi. Please chant. Sri Guru Vacha Janami Bhagavan Chatrur Unnatirasya Karanam Shishyayo Pabritang Tejo Prigupir Pramavadibihi Sri Guru Ravacha Janami Bhagavan Chatrur Unnatir asya karanam Shishyayo pabritang tejo Prigupir bhamavadibihi Vaishnavins Sri Guru Ruvacha Janami Bhagavan Chatrur Unnatir asya karanam Shishyayo Pabritang Tejo Prigubir Brahmavadibihi Sri Guru Ravacha Janami Bhagavan Chatur Unnatir Asya Karanam Shishyayo Pabritang Tejo Prigubir Brahmavadibihi. Okay, synonyms. Sri Guru Ravacha. Brihaspati said. Janami. I know. Bhagavan. O Indra. Shatruho. Of the enemy. Unnatahe. Of the elevation. Asya. Of him. Karanam, the cause. Shishyaya, unto the disciple. Upabritam, endowed. Tejaha, power. Prigubihi, by the descendants of Brigu. Brahmavadibihi, all powerful Brahmanas. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, said, O Indra, I know the cause for your enemies becoming so powerful. The Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being pleased by Bali Maharaj, their disciple, endowed him with such extraordinary power. Please repeat. Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, said, O Indra, I know the cause for your enemies becoming so powerful. The Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being pleased by Bali Maharaj, their disciple, endowed him with such extraordinary power. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, informed Indra, quote, ordinarily, Bali and his forces could not achieve such strength. But it appears that the Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being pleased with Bali Maharaj, endowed him with this spiritual power. In other words, Brihaspati informed Indra that Bali Maharaj's prowess was not his own, but that of his exalted guru, Shukracharya, We sing in our daily prayers, Yasya Prasadad Bhagavat Prasado, Yasya Prasadan Nagati Katopi. By the pleasure of the spiritual master, one can get extraordinary power, especially in spiritual advancement. The blessings of the spiritual master are more powerful than one's personal endeavor for such advancement. Narottam Das Thakur therefore says, Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Chitaita Kariya Aikya Arna Kariya Mane Asha. Especially for spiritual advancement, one should carry out the bona fide order of the spiritual master. By the parampara system, one can thus be endowed with the original spiritual power coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo viduhu. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desha Tarane. So, again, practically in every page of the Srimad Bhagavatam there's such fantastic information that one can dive into very deeply. And we're meant to do that. We have the political season upon us. November means everybody's after you to vote for this person, vote for that person, vote for this proposition, don't vote for that proposition, etc., etc. But our proposition is read Srimad Bhagavatam. Get to know these personalities. See? Who is the mayor of Los Angeles right now? Garcetti, yes. One person, many people are shrugging. I don't know. Yeah, when the devotee approached Dadwaita Maharaj and said, shouldn't we at least read a newspaper so we can know what's going on outside? He said, I don't bother. Whenever I really want to know something, I just stop any materialist and ask them what's going on. And they're happy to tell me. So if you can't remember who the mayor of Los Angeles is, just ask. Stop anybody on the street and ask them, who's the mayor of Los Angeles? And they'll tell you. Because we know that it's much better to pass from this world, which is going to come inevitably, thinking of these names in the Bhagavatam than that name out there, Garcetti or Obama or whomever. If you can't remember those names, fine, don't worry about it. Everything is okay. But try to remember these names. If you die thinking about Bali Maharaj, don't you think you're going to go to a higher destination? Or to speak of, you die thinking about Shukadeva Goswami or Parikshit Maharaj or any of the wonderful personalities mentioned in this wonderful scripture. So that's what we're meant to do. Prabhupada once, he was asked about the bookstores here in L.A. Actually, Ramashwar was extolling, as only Ramashwar can, the glories of the book distributors. Prabhupada, the distributors are doing so well. They're going out to the airport and it's just increasing every day. 80 big books a day, 90 big books, 100. And Prabhupada said, that's very well, nice, very good, but are they reading my books? That was Prabhupada's response. Are they reading my books? He said, I didn't write these books just for you to sell. I wrote them, first of all, for you to read. So we should all take that to heart. Srila Prabhupada's books are meant for each and every one of us individually. We should take it as an individual gift from Srila Prabhupada to us. My dear Bhakta Jared, here is my Bhagavad Gita as it is. My dear Acharya Narottam, here is my Srimad Bhagavatam as it is also. Every one of Prabhupada's books is as it is. That's what distinguishes them, because we know they were all existing, most of these books. I grew up in New York City and we there were so many esoteric bookstores that you could go to find all kinds of far out things to read. So I came across Bhagavad Gita in English, but there was no impression, as Prabhupada himself says, if you read or hear the Vedic scriptures from non-devotees, you don't get any impression of devotion to Krishna. They may seem far out, they may attract you. A lot of the intellectuals in the West were always attracted to Bhagavad Gita. They would sit around and have armchair discussions about Bhagavad Gita, but they were not moved to become devotees of Krishna. That is the difference. When you hear in the cyclic succession, as Prabhupada ends his purport here talking about Eva Parampara Prabhupada, that this is coming down in Parampara. And when one receives it in that way, then the potency is there. The example we use in preaching is there may be so many holes in the wall, They may even look like receptacles. Like right now, this looks like the receptacle right here, electrical outlet. But notice I didn't plug in there, even though it's closer, because I know there's no power there. They diverted the power to power the TV. So this outlet doesn't have any power. Don't try to plug anything in there. So I had to get power over here. When you're plugged into the right receptacle that's connected to the powerhouse, then you get power. So it's the same thing with spiritual power. When you're plugged in to the parampara that's connected to the source of spiritual power, Krishna, then you get the spiritual power. Otherwise, you may concoct so many things. You may even use the same names that we use, but the power is not there because it is not authorized. It's not coming in parampara. When things are coming in parampara, then the power is there. Like Shukracharya, like I mentioned, he had this power of Atma Sanjivita. He could bring living beings back to life after they were killed, especially in battle. So he was bringing all these demoniac soldiers back to life, and the demigods wanted to have that power. But they couldn't just learn it themselves. They had to get it from somebody who had it, namely Shukracharya. That's why they sent the son of Brihaspati, Katsa, to learn that. And because he got it in the cyclic succession directly from Shukracharya himself, then it was potent, and he was able to go back to the demigods and teach them. Everything has to come in the cyclic succession. When we first joined, or at least when I joined in 73, they used to tell us that one of the regulative principles is no speculation. Nowadays, I don't hear the new devotees discussing like that. But that was one of the regulative principles. No meat, no fish, no eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no speculation. One of the regulative principles. Why speculate? What is the use of value of our speculation? You see? But part of the materialistic way of life is that we are convinced, lifetime after lifetime, that you are smart. It's your life. You have to figure things out. You have to, you. So then you die with you as the center, and then you come back again. Instead of putting Krishna in the center. You see? Instead of being trained to put Krishna in the center and living by the intelligence that Krishna supplies, we are again convinced. The parents tell you, the teachers tell you, your friends tell you, you're smart. You figure it out. You. My father told me that also. When I joined, he said, I can understand that you're attracted to spirituality and all that, but why do you have to have some guru to tell you what to do? You should figure it out. You're a smart boy. You should figure it out. So this, again, is the material disease. Now, we want to be in the center. And we already are contaminated with that disease. So when it's reinforced from all quarters, again, your parents, the educational system, your friends, everybody's telling you, you're smart. You should figure it out. It's your life. You should figure out what to do. You should. No. Lifetime after lifetime, we've made a mess of our life. That's why we're still here. We're still here. We're always trying to live by our strength and our intelligence and our me, me, me. Who are we? That's the first question you should ask. Who am I? I like to point out to myself and to especially students when I'm speaking that anything that you know in your life that is of any practical value, even something as simple as how to tie your shoelaces, somebody taught you. You didn't figure it out. Somebody taught you. Anything that you know in your lifetime, in your life practically that's of any practical value, somebody taught you. You see? And then, because they make some incremental so-called advance, they want to be glorified. It's just like with computers. You know, the original computers were mainframes. They were like the size of this room and they could barely do anything. And then gradually, in my own life, I've seen, because I learned how to program mainframe computers in college as part of engineering, I've seen how they gradually reduce to the size of a refrigerator, to the size of, you know, a desktop computer, now to laptops, now to the phone that you carry in your pocket has more power than it. Million times over than the original computers. You know, it's like that small, and smaller and smaller. So each successive generation of scientists, they are glorified themselves. But without the previous generation, they wouldn't have anything. So you'd have incrementally improved upon it, and then they hit a barrier, just like TV. Now they just keep giving you bigger and bigger TVs, and flatter and thinner, but it's the same technology. You know, they've hit a barrier there. So there's always a barrier on the material side. The point beyond which you can't go. But on the spiritual side, everything is ever increasing. Ever increasing. Just like the pastime of the Damodar Leela. It's amazing that Mother Yashoda could bind Krishna at all, because Krishna is the unlimited, ever-increasing Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot get a rope around him. There is no difference between his outside and his inside. He's unlimited. How do you tie up unlimited? You can't, unless the unlimited Supreme Person allows you to tie him up. So as we say, or we sing every morning, he's bound by the love of his devotees. By that love, Krishna allows himself to be bound. Otherwise, it's not possible to bind Krishna. So similarly, it's not possible to speculate and figure out the absolute truth. It's not possible. It cannot be done. Therefore, achintya is the first word in Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. Achintya beda beda tattva. Achintya, inconceivable, simultaneous oneness and difference. We cannot conceive of Krishna and his potencies. It's not possible. We cannot. We are thinking that if I can't conceive of something, then it's mythology. Just like the description today. You light a fire, you chant some mantras, and out of the fire comes a chariot with horses and, you know, quivers of arrows. And people think you're nuts. You go and tell them this. They think you're crazy. You guys are certifiably crazy if you think you can light a fire and get live horses to come out. We can understand when you light a fire, you put the horse in and it dies. That they can understand. But they can't understand that the same horse comes out again with renewed life, which is what the Vedic yogis were able to do. Because the brahmanas had the potency and they chanted the mantras properly. The ashwamedha, gavalambam, those sacrifices were performed. The old animal, the cow or the horse, was put into the fire, and by reciting the mantras properly, they came out again with a new body, youthful body. But because in Kali Yuga, there are no proper brahmanas who can chant the mantras precisely, properly, then these things are forbidden in Kali Yuga. Forbidden. And that was why Lord Buddha, Nindasi, Yagavidya Ahaha Shruti Jata, he decried the Vedas, because in his time, 2,500 years ago, they were doing these sacrifices improperly, and they were simply killing animals, poor animals. And so he said, don't perform these sacrifices, please. And they said, well, it's stated in the Vedas. He said, I don't care about the Vedas. Just follow me. So that's why Jayadeva Goswami says, Nindasi Yagya Vidir Ahaha Shruti Jata. Lord Buddha, he decried the Vedas. He said, don't follow the Vedas. You follow me. So, but we know that the Vedic mantras, if they're recited properly, precisely, by qualified brahmanas, then you get the result. So, all of that Vedic knowledge, as Prabhupada mentioned, has been distilled into this Bhagavad Gita. And if we simply read Bhagavad Gita and apply the spiritual science that's taught there in our lives, then we will see the result. We are seeing the result. We are seeing the result. We were glorifying Srila Prabhupada yesterday, most of us primarily for the wonderful effect he had on our lives personally. Every one of us personally were transformed. And I know in my own case, there's no doubt in my mind that, I mean, I would have been way off the deep end. I was already off the deep end. I mean, I was sort of a spiritual seeker, so-called, but spiritual seeking in those days meant, you know, dabbling in all kinds of controlled substances that, you know, expand your... So I know, I would have been completely consumed by that activity. And so Prabhupada saved me personally, saving all of us by insisting that we not be enamored by the speculative presentation of the modern materialistic society and just simply accept the wisdom. Who remembers the definition of wisdom that Keshavananda Das gave, Brahmacharya Vinayagiri class? They have a very interesting definition of wisdom as taken from Sampurana. Not just realization. Now you guys, you have to listen to class. You don't just, you know, there's a story that the guru comes, after a long time, comes to visit, and all the disciples come, and they sit in front of him, and they go, Jai Gurudev, Jai Gurudev. And so he starts to speak, and then he says, I would like a glass of water. And they all sit there and go, Jai Gurudev, Jai Gurudev. They don't act. So, no. The very nice definition that he gave of wisdom was the knowledge that Krishna gives you to examine yourself, to look at your own faults, find your own faults. That is wisdom. Knowledge coming from Krishna that allows you to examine yourself, your own life, and find your own faults. That's wisdom. Very nice definition. So, if we take the wisdom that Krishna is giving us in the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, all these other sacred scriptures that Prabhupada has given us, we should at least come to this point where we can thoroughly examine our own consciousness, our own lives, see what's wrong, and then to develop the desire to correct it. If you don't have a desire to correct, then you're not going to act on it. We're not going to act on it. So spiritual life begins, real spiritual life begins with understanding that I'm contaminated. The living entity is by nature pure. Krishna is the supreme pure, whole, complete spirit, and we're parts and particles. So we're by nature pure. But we are, while in this material atmosphere, we're covered by the contamination of material. Everything is transformed. Original love is transformed into lust. Everything is transformed, contaminated. So spiritual life begins when one is taught by the spiritual master how to be introspective, to look and see the contamination and then develop a desire to clean. You see, if you don't realize it's contaminated, then why would you want to clean? So proper cleaning begins with proper vision. When you see, just like we were all so covered that we didn't see things that Prabhupada saw. And Prabhupada was exhibited transcendental exasperation at that. Like once he was circumambulating, walking around the Krishna Balaram compound with his disciples walking because it was just newly built and he was looking around. And the Prabhupada stopped. And he says, why doesn't anybody see? So the devotees are looking around. Once the Prabhupada saw something wrong, everybody realized what's wrong. They're looking around. Nobody could see anything. Why don't you see? Everybody is shaking. What Prabhupada? The Prabhupada pointed up. The sun had already come up and there was a light bulb on. So, this is what the Guru does. He trains us to see externally and more importantly, internally, to see what is wrong, what we have to work on. That is real wisdom. And then, obviously, if you're equipped to cleanse your own consciousness, then you are qualified to help others cleanse their consciousness. Otherwise, we're not. If we're not interested in cleaning ourselves, then there's no question of helping other people to clean themselves. So everything begins at home. That's one of the truisms that they taught us as children. I was born in Jamaica, so I began my education in the British system, which is full of truisms. So it says, charity begins at home. So if we're not in a charitable mood to ourselves, then we can't be genuinely charitable to others. In other words, don't give somebody something and claim it's good unless you also think it's good and are willing to use it for yourself. Why would I give you something to eat or anything that I'm claiming to be good if I don't want it myself? So everything begins at home. So if we are in this mood of cleaning our own consciousness, applying this Vedic wisdom to our own lives, then we become qualified to assist others in applying it to their lives. So evam parampara praptam, this is coming down in disciplic succession, and therefore there's potency. And our business then is just to remain connected, firmly connected, properly connected to this spiritual lineage that we have had the good fortune of coming in contact with. And then we will be given the potency to clean our own consciousness and to help others to do the same. We can stop here. Any questions, comments? Brief, we don't have a lot of time. Balaram Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Hare Prabhu, I'm just very curious. Bali Maharaj got the favor of the descendants of the Brahmins. I just wanted to know, what did he do to gain that favor?
What did he do to gain their favor? Well, he was the leader of the demons at that point, and he's very valiant. He fought, he gave himself. He died, actually, in the battle, fighting against Indra and the demigods. So they were pleased by that effort. You see, Shukracharya is that prime descendant of Bhrigu, and he is the guru of the demons. So he was pleased by the effort of Bali Maharaj and others, but primarily Bali Maharaj. They went out and fought valiantly, and they died. So he was rewarded, first of all, with being brought back to life, and then being... He was a very obedient disciple, in other words. And the guru is always pleased when the disciple is obedient. When the disciple allows themselves to be disciplined. Prabhupada also stressed that. He said, disciple means discipline. If you don't want to be disciplined, then you don't need a guru. If you think that you're perfect, everything is alright, and you don't need to be disciplined, then you don't need a guru. Because the guru's first business is to discipline the disciple. Tell you what to do, what not to do. If you don't want somebody, again, if you think that you're capable of figuring everything out, then you don't need a guru. The guru's business is to tell the disciple what to do and what not to do. So, Bali Maharaj was a very good disciple of Shukracharya. He allowed himself to be disciplined. He did whatever he was told to do, and therefore they were pleased with him. All right, one more and then we can stop. Over here.
Yeah, you were saying about how like the followers of Buddha, they never read the Vedas, but Buddha was telling them to follow him. So what exactly did Buddha actually preach? And like, what's the con of like them not reading the Vedas?
His main message at that time, again, was to stop killing the animals. So he preached nonviolence and vegetarianism. So the modern-day followers of Buddha, some of whom claim they're Buddhists, but they eat meat, it's a bunch of nonsense. Because primarily, and foremost, at that point, he wanted to stop the animal slaughter. So he said, because people say, what is prescribed in the Vedas, that we can put animals in the fire? And he said, don't follow the Vedas, then you follow me. But save the poor animals. And nowadays, again, people claim to be Buddhists and they eat meat. Even the Buddhist monks, some of them. So the excuse they use, like in Thailand, they go around with the begging bowl and people put meat in there. So they say, well, you know, we're trained to beg and whatever they put in the bowl, we eat. If it's rice, we eat it. If it's meat, we eat it. So then our response to them is, if it's stool, would you eat it? You see? No. Because you discriminate, this is not edible. So then you should also discriminate that the flesh of the animal is not to be eaten. You see, you don't completely give up your power of discrimination. You won't eat stool if it's put in your begging bowl. So don't eat meat when it's put in the bowl either. Where's that meat coming from? It's the flesh of an animal that was slaughtered and there's bad karma. Even though the Buddhists think eventually there's nirvana, nothingness, that's their idea of nirvana, still they have the concept of karma. That you should do good in this world because... But it's not clear. See, when you don't have, again, complete attachment to parampara and a guru to describe you, things become all messed up. Like you go to Tibet, which is one of the, you know, the strong seats of Buddhism, and they're so trained there in terms of respect to some life. Like every time they build a house and they dig in the ground, they move every single earthworm that they dig up to another place and put it back in the ground. Such concern for life. But then they will kill a cow and eat the flesh. Complete craziness. You know, no proper understanding. And that's why we need guru. Otherwise you come to these mixed understandings that the earthworm is sacred and you should move it somewhere else, but the cow you can kill and eat. Mixed up. So we're very, very fortunate that we're hearing from Srila Prabhupada clearly, do this, don't do that. And why? Prabhupada gives clear explanation of everything. So we're very, very fortunate. We're meant to drink that up. Drink up that information, become purified, and help him in purifying the world. Jai. Granthara Chimant Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai.